I'd like to welcome everybody this afternoon to the Second Court of Appeals. We have one case being argued at 2:30. We'll have another one argued at 3:30. We'll take a break in between, but if anybody wants to stick around, of course, you're more than welcome to. I understand that the lawyers have checked in and given the clerk the times that you want to argue. So I'll introduce the panel that we have today on this case. To my left is Justice Dana Womack. To my right is Justice Dabney Basil, and I'm Elizabeth Kerr. And I will ask the clerk to call the case.
The court will now call Prestonwood and Faith West Homeowners Association, Bruce W. Hammond et al. Versus City of Arlington, Texas. May it please the court, Mr. Michael J. Hammond will argue for the appellant. Mr. Robert F. Brown will argue for the appellee.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you, and may it please the court. We are here today to seek a reversal of the granting in its entirety of a plea to the jurisdiction from the 153rd District Court. The trial court granted the plea to the jurisdiction for the two causes of action that we had initially filed in the plaintiff's first amended original petition. We are only seeking the reversal on the inverse condemnation count. We are not seeking reversal on the Texas Tort Claim Act count. The issue before the court today is foundationally, have the plaintiffs and the appellants in this case pled facts sufficient to vest the court with jurisdiction? That is the only case, that's the only question that we have before the court today. In reviewing a plea to the jurisdiction, the court must determine, this is from the Hartz Bluff case, whether the plaintiff's pleadings construed in favor of the plaintiff allege facts affirmatively demonstrating the court's jurisdiction to hear the case. For a cause of inverse condemnation, there are broadly five elements. Ownership, the municipal government had to, or municipal body had to take some affirmative act or intent. There had to be causation for a public use without consent. And just to put a very clear button on it, in our first amended plaintiff's petition, the ownership is satisfied at paragraphs 2 through 30, where we list each individual plaintiff and what properties or property that they own that are adjacent to the waterway in question. Regarding the second element of intent, we would point to the court to paragraph 54, where we cite that on November 1st, 2018, City of Arlington Mayor Jeff Williams issued an emergency order that the dam was an imminent threat to the general welfare of the public. The dam was breached that same day. As to causation, we point to paragraphs 66 through 68 in the plaintiff's first amended petition, stating that the results of the city's actions have been nothing short of devastating. Nearly every lot has encountered substantial erosion. Retaining walls have crumbled and fallen into the almost dry creek bed, and some homeowners even face the potential of losing the structural integrity of their homes.
Counsel, what about the city's argument that that this dam was going to fail anyway? Would your clients not have suffered the same fate?
Well,
at some point,
that is not certain at all, Your Honor. The dam was not in great condition. There's no argument about that. The problem for the city, though, is they don't get to come and place themselves in the position of being the party to breach the dam and then say, well, it was going to breach on its own. Factually important, again, it's not critical for determination of jurisdiction, but factually, the city obtained an engineering report that we attached to the petition that said that there was a threat of it breaching, but in their imminent steps, what they requested to be done immediately, they never mentioned breaching the dam.
So, yeah, so I had a question about that, because their very first, as you know, their very first immediate remedial action said immediate lowering of the lake level. Now, I don't know enough about how dams work. Did their deliberate breaching of the dam, which I assume meant they poked a hole in it and let some water come out, are there other ways to immediately lower the lake level?
There certainly are, Your Honor. And rather than simply poking a hole, they actually brought on a very large piece of equipment that caused, truthfully, more damage than would have been required to mitigate any harm that the dam posed. The report is interesting in that if the city had read it, speaking of lake levels, the lake at its height was about 20 feet deep due to silting over the course of years. It was only between 3 to 5 feet. Now, that's the report that the city obtained. Again, their report did not call for the breach. However, Mayor Williams did issue an emergency order on November 1st, and the dam was breached that same day. We obviously, as the plaintiffs, have a lot of questions about that. We have a lot of questions about what led to the city funding and obtaining a report that in no way called for breaching of the dam, to the dam being breached within 2 days. Those are fundamental questions that, under the case law and with the pleadings that we have, having properly pled inverse condemnation, we would be entitled to pursue answers to those questions through discovery. And in fact, that would be one of the first questions that we would want to address. We do have the statement at paragraphs, I believe, 70 to 73, which satisfy a portion of the intent. We have an assistant city engineer that stated to two of the plaintiffs that the city was well aware that when they breached this dam, the erosion and the property damage to upstream properties was going to occur. That's an important fact. The city, in its responsive brief, seems to say that this assistant city engineer wasn't high up enough in the chain of custody, didn't have the ultimate policy decision to decide whether the dam was breached or not. And that actually argues in favor of sending this back to the trial court, because we don't know that. We don't know what conversations the mayor had. We don't know who spoke to him. We don't know if he read the report, if he appreciated what was in the report. We have pled what we know to be true. Those facts.
So there's nothing in the record as it exists now to show how Mayor Williams reached his decision that this dam has got to be breached immediately.
There isn't, Your Honor. We have the report issued October 30th. We have his emergency declaration November 1st. And quite frankly, that has been the foundational question that these 30-plus homeowners have been trying to get answered for over 3 years now. This dam breach was in November of 2018. These homeowners fought with the city, worked with the city before filing suit. They did so reluctantly. They did so when the city failed to take any accountability for what they did and the harm that they caused. And it is real, and with every day that passes and every rain that comes, there's more erosion, there's more damage. One of the homes near Lamar Boulevard just spent about $130,000 putting in a very sophisticated retaining wall, and that wall is already being threatened. So the damage is very real. Again, we feel that we have pled, and I'm happy to continue if the court would like, directing you to, in our petition, the elements that we've pled that meet the elements of inverse condemnation. And Your Honors, it's that simple. It's that simple for determining whether or not the court has jurisdiction to hear. The case law is very clear. This is a sufficiency of the pleadings question, not the evidence. And a lot of the city's arguments, and indeed a lot of the cases, talk about whether a taking was ultimately found. But that's not the issue. Whether a taking is ultimately found in this case, well, that's going to be up to the plaintiffs to carry our burden of proof. We've alleged the facts.
Speaking of burden of proof, your reply brief kind of impliedly accepts the fact that the doctrine of necessity has been adopted in Texas. Who has the burden of proof on that issue?
Your Honor, the doctrine of necessity has been adopted in Texas, not in the context of absolving the government liability for a taking, however. And even if the doctrine of necessity were found to apply, again, the city in their response brief said this would be a case of first impression.
I thought Steele was a taking case.
Steele v. Houston was a taking. Steele v. Houston dealt I apologize, Your Honor.
It's the one where the police set a house on fire.
I thought that was Steele, but I didn't.
Gone.
Yes. Yeah. There is still, you know, San Jacinto River Authority versus Bernie dealt with Hurricane Harvey. Clearly an emergency situation. Clearly there was a need there. But our Supreme Court in that case even said that's not enough to shield the government from liability for a taking. Doesn't mean you can't take the actions that are necessary. You can certainly, if we believe what the city has said and that this was a real legitimate emergency, again, factually we dispute that. But even if we accept that as true, and the city came and did what they needed to do, if hypothetically there were structures or roadways that were in danger should this dam have completely breached, the city could have still taken those actions. But even then, it would not absolve them from liability for an unconstitutional taking. The Bernie case, I believe, really stands for that notion that you can have necessity, but if you take private property, you're still going to be liable for it. And that's ultimately what we're here today. The emergency doctrine, the trial court spent a lot of time, and I cited to several provisions where the trial court seems to misinterpret the effect of an emergency on the liability of the municipality. There is no emergency exception to the Constitution. It doesn't exist. You can take private property, but if you take private property without compensation, you are liable. Our Supreme Court in 2020, in Ray Abbott, said as much. The Constitution is not suspended during states of a disaster. It's an interesting time that we have a case that is in some ways centered around an emergency order and emergency steps that were taken to address a specific set of facts. This one just so happens to predate COVID by a little over a year. But make no mistake, a lot of the arguments are very similar to a lot of the arguments that are being made and quite frankly are being litigated across the country. This is very similar to that. However, there simply is no emergency exception that would absolve the city from their liability. Regarding the waiver, certainly the government has sovereign immunity unless there is a waiver. Steele v. Houston does, though, however, state that the Constitution itself is the authorization for compensation for the destruction of property and is a waiver of governmental immunity for the taking, damaging, or destruction of property for public use. So once we have the waiver, that's an important point because then it turns on the sufficiency of the pleadings. Have the plaintiffs alleged facts sufficient to support each element of the cause of action? The city in their response brief pointed to Hart's Bluff, which was a similar case that turned on a plea to the jurisdiction. This case is entirely distinguishable from that. In Hart's Bluff, you had a plaintiff that purchased some bottom land at a reservoir, and they intended by buying it, they were going to sell mitigation bank credits. And I will be very honest with you, I have no idea what mitigation bank credits are. They apparently did, and they thought that it was worth buying this land. The Army Corps of Engineers who oversaw the construction of that reservoir denied their permit. Those plaintiffs sued the state for a regulatory taking, and the Supreme Court in that case found properly, no, the state didn't take any action. The federal government through the Army Corps of Engineers did. So while that case did turn the same way, in other words, the plea that jurisdiction was granted and there was no cause of action, it was simply because there were no set of facts that they could allege that would have vested that trial court with jurisdiction. Almost all of the cases that are cited by either side in this case are all cases that ultimately had their day in court. they at least reached the minimal threshold of discovery to determine what facts you could prove or not prove. A lot of them were determined as motions for summary judgment. Inverse condemnation finding is a question of law. So if we get down the road and there are no legitimate questions of material fact, summary judgment might be appropriate in this case. But it's not appropriate now. We are entitled to that discovery process. We are entitled to carry our burden of proof to meet all five of the elements that we have to. We feel incredibly confident that we can do that. We think that the facts and the law align to allow these homeowners a real and lawful way to reach compensation. In order to do that, however, we do have to be returned back to the trial court so that we can engage in discovery, so that we can meet the burden that we have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel.
May it please the court. Counsel, my name is Robert Brown, and I'm proud to stand up here today representing the appellee, the City of Arlington. As far as whether there's a factual dispute, we are standing solely on their pleadings. We believe that their pleadings don't meet their burden. Justice Bassel, you asked who has the burden of proving the doctrine of necessity. The plaintiff have the burden to plead facts that, if accepted as true, established jurisdiction. In this case, the jurisdiction is their facts that, if proved, would show a waiver of sovereign immunity because of a taking. So they have to, yes, sir.
You have to prove a waiver of governmental immunity? I thought Article 1, Section 17 was a freestanding claim. You didn't have to prove a waiver.
You don't have to, the waiver is automatic if, this is the big if the pleadings are sufficient to show that there is a viable takings claim.
What is your position? Who has the burden of proof on necessity?
It is our position that the plaintiff has the burden of proving, pleading facts that establish the court's jurisdiction, and to establish the court's jurisdiction in a takings case, they must plead facts that, if assumed to be true, state an inverse condemnation case. Otherwise, there's no waiver.
Well, and that includes the burden. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
That includes the burden of negating an affirmative defense?
Your Honor, I don't believe the doctrine of necessity is an affirmative defense.
Well, Steele, the case you relied on, says the City of Houston may defend its actions by proof of a great public necessity. The scant proof made by the City of Houston in this case does not establish as a matter of law that it is excused from making compensation for destruction of plaintiff's dwelling and personal property. Sounds like the Supreme Court thinks you have the burden.
Well, I believe the Supreme Court in Steele is basically just saying there were not enough facts on that record for them to reach the doctrine of necessity. Contrary to Mr. Hammond says there is no doctrine of necessity, I believe the courts all around the country have invoked and applied the doctrine of necessity.
Okay, let's say that we're just under a normal police power sort of scenario. So in 1984, the Texas Supreme Court in the City of College Station versus Turtle Rock Corporation said that while a governmental entity doesn't have to compensate for losses occasioned by the proper and reasonable exercise of police power, determining whether such exercise was reasonable and proper requires consideration of all circumstances using a fact-sensitive test of reasonableness, which sounds like maybe Mr. Hammond is right that we need to get a little bit more facts here.
Well, that was a part dedication fee case, and the law at that time, before some of the Supreme Court's decisions in Nolan and Dolan, which changed the burden of proof on who bears the burden of proving what is an exaction. At that time, the burden was on the landowner. The U.S. Supreme Court and the Texas Supreme Court in the Flower Mound Dolan case said, no, that's actually the government's burden. But it's important.
But still, it's pretty fact-intensive whether something's necessary or a proper exercise of police power or however you want to call it, right?
Right. Well, the police power is much broader than what we're talking about here. I mean, the term police power sometimes gets mislabeled thinking it's when the government is doing law enforcement. Now, the police power is when the government is using its legitimate powers for the public good. And the Steel was correct. The police powers is not an exception to the Constitution. You can use your police powers legitimately, and there can be a taking. The doctrine of necessity is a much more narrow subset of those police powers. It says in extraordinary circumstances, in emergency circumstances, that we don't apply the takings analysis because of the situation.
But the Freeze and Nichols report didn't say, you know, city, if you don't act within 48 hours, half the town's going to be flooded. I mean, I've read that report, and it doesn't sound to me like it. They weren't even recommending a controlled breach of the dam.
Well, they said the failure was imminent, and they did list some potential remedial measures. Now, granted, they did not say go poke a hole in the dam, but they said that it was going to blow, in essence. And so the question is, and it discussed what would happen if there was a breach,
right,
you know, an uncontrolled breach, and they talked about debris washing downstream and putting public service providers on notice. So,
but it sounded like part of their immediate remedial actions by including the idea of piling up sandbags and removing a tree and that sort of thing. I mean, that doesn't. To me, when you couple that with their suggestions in here that maybe the culverts ought to be cleaned out and let the wastewater treatment people know that, but they didn't even, as I recall, didn't even think that Green Oaks Boulevard was going to be flooded.
Well, those would have taken those type of things, taking the silt from the lake, and those would have taken time. And the purpose of the doctrine of necessity is that you have to act with speed and confidence within limited time constraints.
But you have to act reasonably.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
But you have to act reasonably in response to the necessity.
It has to be reasonable, but with all due respect, I'm not saying the decision is non-justiciable, but I think the way the law has been set up is that the judicial branch should tread very cautiously in second-guessing the executive branch when they make that emergency decision. Because the whole history of it, and I cited to a bunch of law review articles, I didn't put it all in the paper, but it's an English common law doctrine that came out of the Great Fire of London of 1666. When London started burning, the mayor of London was urged by a number of citizens to tear down a row of houses that would act as a fire break. And the mayor said, well, number one, those houses are owned by lawyers. And number two, I'm afraid I'm going to get sued personally, or if not, then the city will get sued. And because of that, he didn't. And most of London burned. And then this common law doctrine was created by the English courts to say, no, there are certain circumstances where we want you to make that call. Maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong, but if it's within the sphere of reasonableness based on the circumstances, you have to be somewhat fearless. If you're not fearless, then London burns. In this case, the mayor made the call.
We resolve the reasonableness question on the basis of the pleadings. They don't have a chance to test the facts as to whether the decision was reasonable.
Well, Judge, they are the master of their own pleadings, and like I say, we're relying on the engineering report that was attached. And the order. There's some declarations in the mayor's order that, I mean, remember, this was the governor of Texas had declared Tarrant County a disaster because of the heavy rains. It's not just something local. The mayor basically is acting in the governor's stead as the governor's agent under the Disaster Act, which we're all much more familiar with in light of COVID, but there wasn't a lot of discussion before that. But the law gives the local official the opportunity and the responsibility to make those hard decisions in the time of crisis, and based on the mayor's review of that report and the discussions of the things that could happen with an uncontrolled breach. Remember, there's a difference between just poking a hole in this dam and letting the water filter out versus letting it being an uncontrolled breach, which the report, engineering report, talks about. There's problems with dam debris moving downstream. It could clog up outlets. They said put the wastewater treatment plant on notice, put the police on notice. I mean, there is enough in that report that been given the deference that we believe that a disaster, local disaster official should be given under the law for public policy reasons, that the mayor's decision should have been upheld.
Of course, at this point, we don't even know yet what the mayor was told about this report or if he read it or anything, right?
No, all we know is that their pleadings say that he got this report and he issued an order. And granted, I mean, if you want to send this back and have discovery, but remember, one of the tenets of sovereign immunity is not just immunity from damages, it's immunity from suit. It's to protect local governments and their officials from having to go through the discovery process, which takes them away from their normal duties, unless there is a threshold factual specificity pled that allows the court to say, we think that this could be a taking case if everything they say is correct.
Is there a compensation provision in the 75 Disaster Act?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, say again?
Is there a compensation provision in the 75 Disaster Act? In other words, somebody's property's taken as a result of a disaster declaration. Is there a compensation?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor. I mean, I think as a matter of public policy, the legislature created the Disaster Act to allow actions to be taken without any compensation. Obviously, the Constitution provides compensation if you get too far afield. And the Texas Tort Claims Act provides compensation with caps. But one of the things that you have to be very careful about, and the Texas Supreme Court discussed this in a number of the cases we put in the brief, is to be very cautious in interpreting the takings clause broadly, because there are no statutory caps on damages for a taking. These folks have alleged their damages are at the very least $2 million. So when a local official is charged with having to decide, do I make it a call? I make the call, but I think it's in the best interest of the community. And if it turns out I get it wrong, if my city is going to be tagged for $2 or $3 million worth of damages, the reality is local government officials are going to freeze. They're not going to do it. And like the mayor of London, bad things happen. That's the public policy behind this doctrine of necessity, is to encourage local officials to make that call. Even if it's not maybe 100% right, if it's not patently unreasonable, the court should back it. And so we believe this clearly is an example of the use of the mayor's powers. And to answer your question, Judge, yeah, there's nothing in the record to show how the mayor reached the decision other than what they put in the record, which is the engineering report and the mayor's declaration. But even if this court was to determine that they don't think that the doctrine of necessity removes this from a takings. Now, Mr. Hammond has said that there's nothing in the Constitution that says there's an emergency exception. Well, that's correct. It doesn't say that in the text of the Constitution. This is a common law doctrine. There's also nothing in the Constitution that says if you sue a city for benefits that you believe that you are owed under a contract, that that's not a taking. But there was a whole series of cases, and we've cited some in the brief, that says if you sue the government because you didn't get the money you're owed or you didn't get the service you were owed, and that stems from a contractual relationship, that's not a taking. Not because that exception is written into the Constitution that doesn't apply to contract claims. As a matter of common law, you have to figure out whether or not your facts, you know, fit into a round hole with round facts, or are you trying to take it and put it into a square hole with a round peg? And in this case, I don't believe these kind of facts meet that. But quite frankly, Your Honor, even if, like you said, even if you determine that the doctrine of necessity doesn't apply, or you think there's some fact issue, there's other elements they have to meet. And Mr. Hammond says all we have to do is just, you know, rattle them off. Intentional, public use, without consent. Well, it takes more for a plea of jurisdiction to just simply articulate the elements of the cause of action. You have to provide facts, and we put in the brief, you have to provide more than conclusory facts. There's almost a heightened intent standard, a heightened fact standard, particularly on intent. The Supreme Court's even said that. You have to be able to put the facts in that support. They can't be conclusory. So just saying that, well, this is going to cause us a bunch of damage and you knew it, it's like, well, how'd you know it? You can't have an accidental taking. There's no negligent taking. You have to show intent, institutional intent. People don't take property. governments take property. The Constitution protects people from the government taking their property, not individuals. If it's an individual, it'd have to be somebody that's a policymaker or pursuant to some official practice or custom. But you have to show that there's identifiable harm, that either we knew this was going to happen or it was substantially certain.
Well, and it could be that at the end of the day it wouldn't prevail, but don't the plaintiffs say that the city engineer, whose name escapes me, in meeting afterwards said, yes, we knew that there was going to be upstream damage if we did this, and doesn't that fall within, you know, knowing that specific property damage was substantially likely to occur?
All that shows is that it's the pleadings say that this engineering report, a copy of it was given to an assistant engineer, and when asked, were you aware that there would be impacts or damages upstream, she said yes. But all that engineering report says is that the upstream property owners will lose the lake and the aesthetics of the lake. There's nothing in that engineering report that talks about these parade of horribles that we've heard here today about homes are going to fall in and we're going to lose millions of dollars of property value. There's nothing in the engineering report to show that. There's nothing to show that the mayor was aware of that. It's not alleged that the mayor knew it. It's not alleged that this engineer knew about it. All it is alleged is the engineer got the report, and the report says, yes, there's going to be upstream impacts. But does it show that she knew, and that somehow that's imputed to the city, that they knew that all of these horrible things that they claim are going to occur have occurred? And it's important. Negligence can't support a taking. But at its heart, that's really what they're saying. They're saying the mayor thought there was an emergency. He needed to use his power, and he needed to poke a hole in that dam. They're claiming he's wrong. There's not an emergency. They're kind of using both parts. They're saying, we meet the public use take because you think there's an emergency. If you think there's an emergency, it's for a public use. But it's really not for a public use because it's not an emergency. Well, if it was a true emergency, then we believe under the doctrine of necessity, then there is no taking. But if he's wrong.
Public use in this case?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Are you disputing there's a public use in this case?
I don't think there's any. I mean, the public use, marginal public use, would be to prevent downstream damage. Yes, I mean, I believe what the mayor did was to avoid damage to the public. So, yeah, there can be a public use, but the question is, was it a public use that was intentional? Because if what they say is true, and that the mayor just made a bad call, he didn't get his ducks in a row, he used misjudgment. That is the essence of negligence. The mayor had a duty of care to do this, to study this, to look at these other options. He didn't meet that duty of care. He fell short. Guess what, folks? That's negligence. Negligence cannot support a taking. It has to be an intentional action. And the final issue is, and Justice Kerr, you said, well, the report indicates the dam's going to fail. How are these folks not simply in the same position? And I think the only evidence in front of you from their pleadings are the dam's going to fail. These things are going to happen. And we cited the case, the Gragg case, where the plaintiff both pled to get past jurisdictional issues and at trial proved that when this dam was, water was released from the dam from a public works project, that the water they got in a heavy rain was much, much more water than they would have got without that. They were still going to get water in the rain, but the court was very, very cognizant of saying that was a required element for proximate cause, that they had to both plead and prove that what the government did harmed them above and beyond what happened, and that's not here. We believe it was incumbent upon them to have alleged like they did in Gragg, and the court goes through details, how detailed their pleadings are, to basically say that there they established, pled, and proved that these things happened to them because of the government, not in addition to the natural event. And in this case, we believe it was incumbent upon the appellants to have alleged that the mayor poked a hole in the dam. If he hadn't poked a hole in the dam, everything would be fine. But everything that's in the pleading says this dam will fail. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. So in short, the rains that took place in this case, they were an act of God. The mayor was put in a difficult position. He was faced with an engineering report. He was also faced with a dam that had been neglected for over 40 years by these folks, so it was in terrible shape. He made the call using his authority under the Disaster Act, and by doing so, we believe he mitigated downstream damages. There was nothing to show that we would have been aware of these upstream damages. He was using the emergency powers. It was an emergency response. They didn't know at the time of the breach that all these things that they allege are going to happen was going to happen, and it can't be the proximate cause. It was an act of God. The mayor responded. Unlike the mayor of London, who let London burn, Mayor Williams did what he thought was best for the citizens of Arlington, and they shouldn't be subjected to a takings claim, because even being subjected to the threat of a takings claim will cause the next mayor down the road or the next county judge down the road to act fearfully, cautiously, not in the best interest of the citizen, because they are fear of unmitigated liability, which has no caps, and that is simply a place that local governments that fiscally responsible cannot go. We believe the trial court was correct in granting the plea of the jurisdiction in its entirety, and we would ask that this court uphold that grant in its entirety, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. I want to make it very clear that the act that we are challenging is not Mayor Williams signing the declaration. Whatever his mindset was at the time, whatever he knew, whatever he had been told, whatever emails he had read, phone calls he had had, those are factual questions. Again, we feel abundantly confident that we have pled sufficient facts to entitle these plaintiffs to discovery. The act that we are challenging, the intentional act, is the moving on to the property with heavy-duty equipment and removing a large piece of dam. That was not done negligently. They didn't have a duty to be there. So I want to make it very clear what action of the city we are challenging. Mr. Brown misstates the conversation as pled between two of the plaintiffs and Audra Valmedez. She had the report. Their conversation was not about the report. They were standing in the creek bed and looked at her and said, did you know, you being the city, because she is an agent of the city, she's employed by the city, did you know this was going to happen? The answer was yes. Under San Jacinto River Authority versus Birdie, and I'm going to come back to this case because I think this case is very critical to this issue. Bernie was dealing with Hurricane Harvey. We had some torrential rains in North Texas in fall of 2018. Nothing that came close to the destruction and the damage that the Houston area suffered due to Hurricane Harvey. It even in Hurricane Harvey, the court found that there could be a taking, that their facts were pled sufficient for a taking. As it relates to intent, the Supreme Court said in Bernie, a claimant pleads the necessary intent for a constitutional takings claim by alleging that the government entity knew that a specific act would cause the resulting identifiable property damage or knew that the specific property damage was substantially certain to result from the government action.
Did that case talk about the doctrine of necessity at all?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor, no. And that's part of why this the city is asking the court, let's make no mistake, the city is asking the court, in a case of first impression, as far as I can tell, not just in Texas, but nationwide, to allow the doctrine of necessity to absolve the government for taking private property. I did a search nationwide because I wanted to see if I could find this anywhere. The closest that I came, and I cited to this in my reply brief, was the Trinco case out of the United States Supreme Court at 722 Federal 3rd, 1375.
Federal Circuit case, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor. They said that in order to apply this, if you're going to, there has to be an imminent danger, an actual emergency, and an actual necessity. The problem for the city is that even if they want to pin their hopes of their defense on the doctrine of necessity, these are questions of fact. The arguments that the city is making might be very ripe, and they might carry some weight if we were here on an appeal dealing with summary judgment. But we're not. This is before any facts have been developed. All of the facts that they would need to carry their burden of proof, and Your Honor, I do agree with you, it's their burden. It clearly is their burden to prove. They're saying that they're not liable. It's an affirmative defense. They don't get to use that absent discovery. They don't get to just say it and have the case dismissed. We have pled the elements properly. And yes, I can walk you through each paragraph because I have that written down here right now. And I understand that the city of Arlington really, really doesn't like this case and they really, really want it to go away. Unfortunately for the city, the law is not on their side. Unfortunately for the city, they took steps in contravention of their own engineering report. They took steps without consulting any of the homeowners that they knew would be affected by their own admission. And their response since then has been, oh, you're welcome. We're the city. You can't sue us. Governmental immunity. Best of luck to you. Your Honors, that's not right. That's not what the law is. And we are entitled to discovery to carry our burden of proof. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, gentlemen. The oral argument has been very helpful. We appreciate your time. And your case is now submitted. We'll stand in recess until 3:30.